Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
So the reorientation of the economy in Southern BC from production and manufacture to this finance capitalism and an over-reliance on real estate as a major engine of urban economies, that's what produces a consumer economy that's hostile to working class people, to working class people who are no longer as necessary as drivers of the economy here locally as they had been 30 or 40 years ago. So that's why our communities are being thrown under the bus of globalization and neoliberalism.
That's the voice of longtime housing activist Ivan Drury. In this week's show, we speak to Ivan and his fight to protect working class affordable housing in the metrotown area against gentrification. This is a struggle that is unfolding all across North America. We speak about why this is happening and what we can do to fight back to protect affordable housing for average people. So stay tuned. My name is Stuart Richardson, and you're listening to Latin Waves. On this week's show, we're going to examine a phenomenon that's been happening all over North America, especially in the large cities. It appears that people have lost faith in the stock market, so many wealthy individuals are speculating on real estate, and housing has become just another commodity. This creates a situation where there's many winners, but there's many more losers who are just trying to make a house a home and find some housing in their region. On the line to talk about this is Ivan Drury. He's a longtime BC housing advocate, and we're going to talk about a specific area in Burnaby called Metrotown, where this has really been accelerated. Welcome to the show, Ivan.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, can you explain the Burnaby Metrotown area and what the scope of what's been happening there the last 2, 3, 4 years?
Well, Metrotown is historically the working class and migrant neighborhood on the outskirts of Vancouver. It's in the first suburb around the perimeter of Vancouver in Burnaby, and it's the place in the neighborhood in Burnaby that has the highest density of rental apartments, and the highest density of renters and not owners. More than 70% of the residents of Metrotown from the last census were recorded as renters. It's also the lowest income community in Burnaby, with more than 50% of the people in the community being considered somewhat on the edge of homelessness because they're paying between 30 to 50% of their incomes towards rent. It also has the highest density of languages other than English spoken in the home of any community in the Lower Mainland. And it tends to be historically have been the community where when people arrive new to Vancouver or to Canada, it's the place where they tended to land. So in the past, refugee settlement agencies put a great number of their clients in the apartments in the Metrotown area, and new immigrants, working class immigrants, would settle in the apartments in that area as well. This has been shifting dramatically in the last 5 years, and there's been an escalating gentrification and displacement of these working class and racialized communities in the last couple of years. These income demographics have changed significantly. Refugee settlement agencies now report that they have practically no clients at all in that area. There's an increasing instability and of the working class character of Metrotown. The reason for that is that the city council has targeted the mass of low-rise rental apartments that were built in the 60s and 70s that are referred to by housing experts as a kind of low-end of market purpose-built rental stock. They've been targeting those for redevelopment into high-rise condos. They've been doing this for the last 3 years at a fairly high rate by rezoning those buildings one at a time. And the Fraser Institute in Vancouver Magazine recognize Burnaby as the most development-friendly municipality in the Lower Mainland and one of the most development-friendly in all of Canada, because they ask practically nothing of those developers when they build these condo developments. They don't ask them to put any rental housing or social housing into those new projects, and they basically provide no amenities for the people who are being pushed out by the demolition of the old buildings. So in the last couple of years, we've lost now close to 800 units of low-end of market rental housing to these site-by-site demolition projects, which our campaign has dubbed demovictions, because they are mass evictions for the purpose of demolition and redevelopment for high-end condos.
Now, Ivan, you're quite right. When I moved here many years ago from Ontario, my young family, we were very low income, and we either could live in South Burnaby or New West. We luckily found a one-bedroom for four of us living in New Westminster, and God knows what we would have done if we didn't have that place available. Now, let's touch on a couple things. First of all, isn't there any protections, say, for the Landlord Tenancy Act or anything for someone who signed a lease in one of these buildings for their families? Isn't there some kind of built-in protections for these people?
Tenants have protections against arbitrary evictions under the BC Residential Tenancy Act. But as is the case with our cluster of rights in a liberal democracy, like Canada's, the rights of property owners trump the rights of individual working class people or renters. So we have some rights as renters in our buildings, but if the property owner decides to change the use of their building from a tenanted building that they rent into something else, like if the owner wants to take the unit over, or if they want to destroy that unit in order to redevelop it as a different form, then they have that basically unchallengeable right through the in the residential tenancy system. So it's called evictions for landlord use. Is something that's protected by the RTA in British Columbia. So if the level of government that would be able to slow mass evictions for demolition, which is a form of landlord use, the level of government is not the province and the Residential Tenancy Act. It's the city governments. In most cases, they can't stop landlords from demolishing the buildings they own and building again within the zoning that's already in that's like the set zoning for the area. But they can provide disincentives for those kinds of demolitions by refusing to grant rezoning applications for higher buildings or greater densities. But the city of Burnaby is doing the opposite. Rather than disincentivizing development, they're doing everything they can to incentivize developers to buy up these buildings with the purpose of demolishing them. So the effect is they're doing that by saying, basically, you can, if you submit a rezoning application, in practice, they've been giving them whatever they want. They can go from 3 stories to 30 stories or 40 stories with very little of a payout towards the community. The effect of that has been that the BC Assessment Corporation that assesses the value of properties and then determines what levels of taxes property owners will pay, they're anticipating that for this year, all of the buildings in the Metrotown area, which is there's about 3,000 units of rental housing in that area at this point. All of those buildings, they're anticipating to have an increase in value of the land by 3 times. And they're also anticipating a devaluing of the built structures on those lands by 90%. And this is the case for almost all of the buildings in the area that is being targeted for redevelopment by Burnaby. It means that the market is anticipating the destruction of all of those units into rubble. And a massive increase in value of the land, which can be done by the stroke of a pen at council level by rezoning that land to take on higher density, higher towers.
Let's take it up to the next level. The city government you mentioned is just signing off in these applications. You would think that the city of Burnaby and Mayor Corrigan were some rabid free market right-wingers, but he calls himself a socialist and he supports many progressive causes and he's a known supporter of the NDP. What has been the response? Has there been any positive feedback from the mayor that this policy could change or may change or there's some compromise?
Well, we've been organizing the campaign against the demoviction of Metrotown for the last 2 years, and we've received nothing but derision from Mayor Corrigan. Corrigan, I think, is a typical post-social democrat politician, like Tony Blair in Britain, or like Zuma in South Africa. Corrigan is cynically posturing as a social democrat on a kind of historic labor position, but his entire orientation for the development of Burnaby is about market forces. He refuses provincial money to put a homeless shelter in Burnaby. And he makes a little bit of noise about some housing, some social housing that they've built, but really it's entirely smoke and mirrors. And they've done nothing to replace the units that are there. When residents who've been evicted from these buildings for demolition have spoken out in the media, or we've taken hundreds of people to Burnaby Council chambers to speak against rezoning applications, Corrigan says things like, this is prime real estate and it's not for the likes of a common worker. People have to be able to afford to live near SkyTrains, which is a sort of attitude that's at odds with what how planners consider what should be developed around transit corridors. Planners propose that housing developments that are for working class people who don't have vehicles and who need to commute for their jobs, that sort of housing should be concentrated on transit corridors. He's building the sorts of housing that is not transit consumers, not transit users who are mm-hmm. going to be living there. It's going to be people who have expensive cars in their basements. Now, rather than listen to the appeals of people who are being affected by these mass rezoning policies, or these site-by-site rezoning policies, and rather than pay attention to the research that that have come out of the grassroots communities, like we did a social impact study last year where we interviewed people on a block that was every single building on the square block was set to be demolished. Mm. And we went and did door knocking and talked to everybody in there. We discovered that about a quarter of those being evicted are being pushed into forms of homelessness by these evictions. All of the long-term residents, there's a lot of seniors who've been in these buildings for 20 or 30 years, whose rents are depressed because there are some controls over rent increases on a single tenancy. So they're paying, some people are paying $500 or $600 for one bedroom. And when they leave, they're moving into a market where the rents are more like $1,000 or $1,200 for a similar unit. So they really have no options. But faced with these things, rather than slow the demolition process and try to find ways to stabilize life for those folks, Corrigan's answer has been to put forward a Metrotown rezoning plan, to have a development plan update for the whole area that will, in a blanket sense, change the zoning for the whole region, affecting all 3,000 units of affordable low into market housing and replacing it all with condos. So that plan is set to be voted on by council this spring and has become focus of what we're trying to stop.
Just to give our listeners some perspective, I have a friend who lives in East Van and he's got a good job. He's educated. His partner works at UBC and they're both doing really well, and they wanted to move closer to UBC and they would go to an apartment and there'd be 12 or 13 couples mm-hmm. looking at the same unit, and there would be bidding wars on rentals. So let's say the place was $1,200, someone would pipe up and say, hey, I'll give you $15, I'll give you $17. Mm-hmm. So we're having bidding wars on available units. Now, here's something I want to touch on before we get into the actual process of how we're going to resist this. What happens to these people? Where do they go? You mentioned some are homeless, they may be hidden homeless, but talk about the pressures that this puts on the rest of what's available in the region and how this has that kind of ripple effect.
Well, this is the main thing that we want to focus on when we discuss the Metrotown plan that Corrigan's proposing. Is that destroying 3,000 units of housing in the Metrotown area of Burnaby is not just a Burnaby issue. The rental stock in the Fraser Valley, the whole of the Vancouver region, is strained, has historically low vacancy rates. That's why we're seeing these kinds of bidding wars. Like some of the people, we were just organizing a rally 2 days ago for people who are in a building who the developer is denying them the compensation that they're supposed to receive under Burnaby's bylaws, and Burnaby's saying they won't support these residents. But some of those folks in there said that they moved into this building knowing it would be demolished. They moved in like 8 months ago, being told that they would have a couple of years before it would be demolished, but they received an eviction notice after only 4 months. But for a building that was set to be demolished, there was bidding wars. People were lining up to move into a unit for just whatever months they could squeeze out of it, because there's just a horrible absence of just a lack of units for people to move into. So the people moving out of buildings that are being demolished now are moving into buildings nearby in the same area, knowing that this entire area is set to be demolished and that they're going to have to move again in the next couple of years. There's an elderly woman, a woman who's 56 years old, who lives in this building with her daughter, who's in her early 20s and is a full-time student, who cares for her mother, who has disabilities. They were evicted from Coquitlam, from a building in Coquitlam that was getting demolished last year, and the development company moved them into another building they managed in the Metrotown area. And then 8 months ago, they were evicted from that building for a demolition into this building. Mm-hmm. And now this building is being demolished and they're being forced to move again. So this mother and daughter have moved. Now this will be the third time that they've been demo-evicted in 2 years. The kind of psychological impact of this kind of reality is that one of constant stress. Even if people don't live in a building that's under a rezoning process, they're all just looking at their watches and waiting for it to be their turn. There are some people who can move around and find a new place, but it comes down to race and class questions about how you pass and how you can present yourself as a good tenant to a prospective landlord. The landlords can really choose from a litany of people. And so this means that those who are most vulnerable are those who are also experience racism from landlords, who don't have English as a first language, and the landlords will discriminate against for linguistic reasons or take advantage of because they can't read contracts or aren't familiar with tenancy law in BC. People who the landlord might profile as low income or as not having a stable income, people who are on pensions or welfare or disability, these folks really cannot find apartments in these contexts. They're the ones who are moving into these places that are set to be demolished as a temporary housing. And this is a broader condition that we're facing in this neoliberal society in Western Canada, that we have temporary jobs, temporary housing, and our lives, unfortunately, are not temporary. We have to make a go of things for a long time to come. And so we have to fight these things out. And that's where we're presented with a real challenge.
I know that MP, the federal MP, is Kennedy Stewart. That's his riding. I know he said some things about housing, and I know the provincial NDP are coming up for election in May. Any hints that there's some allies in the upcoming election? Has the NDP really said anything in their platform about housing? Is there any kind of glimmer of hope in that direction?
This has been a very frustrating point about this particular campaign. Is that Mayor Corrigan's party is the Burnaby Citizens Association, the BCA, and to be a member of the BCA, you have to be a member of the NDP. It's like a municipal branch of the NDP. And the NDP has really rallied around Corrigan and refused to critique him publicly. We have the sense that there are some differences in the party about how he's proceeding with this process, but that those differences haven't boiled over into public critique. And so Kennedy Stewart, David Eby, the provincial and federal MPs and MLAs for the NDP in this area, and like every MLA in Burnaby is NDP. So there's no shortage of those who could have spoken out or put on some pressure and said, like, this isn't acceptable. None of them have. Eby spoke out once just over a year ago when he was in Ottawa and then was silent ever after. It just feels like he was silenced by the party. So the NDP rallying around Corrigan here indicates a bigger problem about what the party, how the party is going to conduct itself in the coming BC election. In the last election, they tried to play themselves as close to the center as possible, and they were completely outflanked by the BC Liberals. And rather than learn from that and orient themselves towards a sense of resistance against politics of austerity and neoliberal financial capitalism, they seem to be doing the same thing again, adopting some kinds of law and order stances, being reasonable about market investment. Most of what they've said about housing has been about foreign investment being crowding out professional prospective home buyers locally in BC, in southern British Columbia. They haven't said anything specific about the crisis that's really affecting us here, which is that, as a recent report said, there's 4,000 homeless people in Metro Vancouver. More than 70 homeless camps exist around the city. And there were 3 independent reports authored last year that blamed the loss of purpose-built rental stock as a direct contributor towards that increasing homelessness. The NDP's inaction on stopping that at the municipal level here in Burnaby, which they could completely do, is an indicator of their refusal to stand up to free market capitalism and to this austerity and neoliberal trend. We see every indication that they're going to be nothing but a light form of the BC Liberals in the coming election. not only is that disappointing in a kind of a historical political arc, but it's a betrayal of the really severe needs of really thousands, tens of thousands of people in this province.
Now let's talk about the market economy, the neoliberal capital economy and housing market in BC, because our premier came out a few months ago and she said she's going to make it better by imposing a 15% tax on foreign buyers, which I think fundamentally is not going to do much. If you push down the price slightly, then you just justify the tax. So can we regulate a housing market? What are some of the solutions to this problem then that you're advocating for?
Well, I think we need to think about the housing market here within a framework of global capitalism and Canadian imperialism. And this is the diversion that is happening for Christy Clark and the BC Liberals and also the BC NDP is to blame foreign buyers, blame consumers for a production problem. And so the reorientation of the economy in southern BC from production and manufacture to this finance capitalism and an over-reliance on real estate as a major engine of urban economies, that's what produces a consumer economy that's hostile to working-class people, to working-class people who are no longer as necessary as drivers of the economy here locally as they had been 30 or 40 years ago. So that's why our communities are being thrown under the bus of globalization and neoliberalism. And the solution to that problem is about admitting that the housing market does not have space for working class people. Our fight should not be to try to get a toehold in home ownership. Home ownership has always been about making claims over unceded indigenous territory for settlers to get the land and housing that they couldn't afford back in Europe. And we need to reject that whole paradigm and instead say that we need to have social housing or universal housing, non-market housing as a condition of being a person on this land. It can be a model of redistribution of capitalist wealth that is stolen from us, and also a redistribution of indigenous lands, because a redistribution of the wealth stolen from indigenous people back to indigenous people, because those people are suffering more than anyone else demographically in this housing crisis. So our model is not to look at the solutions in terms of adjusting the profile of homeowners, or looking for what is basically a housing tariff to protect local investors against the might of foreign investors. These are not issues for working class people. These are not issues for indigenous people. Our justice can be taken by redistributing wealth downwards and supporting lower income people to be able to survive here so that we can carry on fights for justice in more broader and more transformative ways than just trying to get a roof over our heads.
Absolutely. And many years ago, I was lucky enough to get a place in a cooperative housing, and they tied it to your income. So if your income increased, your rent would slightly increase, but never exceeding a certain amount of your income. And it's surprising when people have good housing, all the other social health factors increase very quickly. And I remember 70% of the people in the co-op were paying the regular amount because all of their lifestyle and their health indicators increased. Now, Ivan, I just wanted to find out how our listeners can get some more information or support your efforts and find out more of what's going on there, if not just to help you, but to also look into what you're doing so they can do similar things in their communities.
Well, we'd also love to be in touch more with people who are engaged in struggles like these in other cities around North America and the world. One of our weaknesses is that over the last 30 years, our communities have become increasingly isolated into neighborhoods or just single cities. And that's created kind of a localism where we are obsessed about this one space. And we've lost sight of the interconnectedness of our struggles globally, particularly on questions like housing. So the organization that I organize with is called Alliance Against Displacement. And we're part of organizing this campaign in Burnaby, which is the Stop Demo Evictions campaign, Burnaby. But our website is stopdisplacement.ca. I also work on a social movement publication that broadcasts the struggles and analysis of communities here, mostly in British Columbia. It's called the Volcano Newspaper. And we have a weekly newsletter as well as a quarterly print publication. And our website is thevolcano.org.
That's amazing, and I was just reading some of the high quality articles on that website just before I called you up, and I do encourage people can submit things to you then and contact you for the site.
Absolutely, particularly about struggles in other places, it would be great to publish some things that enter us into discussions beyond this thing, this often depressing world immediately around us.
Thank you so much, Ivan, for the work you do and spending a few moments with you. Any final thoughts before I let you go?
No, I think you've got it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Ivan. We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.